Okay, folks, very warm welcome to all of you to the Introduction to Corporate Communication course. This is our first lecture, obviously. Great to have so many of you here in the class. We will record each and every session, so in case you miss something or you're not able to come to some of the lectures, you can always watch the recordings afterwards, and we will add them to Moodle. I will go through all the practicalities and stuff of the course on the second half. But before that, we have an honor to have one of our professors, Vilma Luomaaho, Vice Dean of Education also at JSB, you know, talking to you about corporate communication, maybe about the latest trends, you know, just to get you involved in the world of corporate communication, to say the least. And yeah, without any further ado, Vilma, the floor is yours.
Thank you. So I'm Vilma Luomaaho, and this is Matias Lievonen. Some of you have already emailed Matias because he's the one in charge of this course. Let's start with a question. I have selected several different pictures up there. If I tell you they are all related to future communication, what would you say would be the logic? And now I want you to talk to the person next to you. You don't need to know them, but tell them what your name, your major, and then figure out what was I thinking when I put those pictures up there for future communication. 3 minutes. Go for it. Okay. Do you guys have any good ideas? Let's hear them. What, and there's no right or wrong answers, you know. So go ahead. What was I thinking? So just shout out loud, what is the future of communication like? The floor is yours. Go ahead, there's no right or wrong answers. You can only win bonus points at this point. So just shout out what comes to your mind as the future communication. Yes, go for it. Artificial intelligence, very good. Extra points, ding, ding, ding. Very good. Yes, artificial intelligence. The future is increasingly artificial. Yes? Ooh, communication to the masses. Yes, yes, we like that. Mass communication, often referred to as broadcast journalism. Mass communication via TV, via radio, via newspapers, telling a message via one medium, reaching masses. Anything else? Yes? Branding. Very good. Very good. It's all about branding. Remember, there's no right or wrong answers. But this is a course on corporate communication, people, so you are expected to communicate. Yes? You still need eye contact? Yeah, actually, the feeling of being seen and the feeling of being heard is getting to be one of the rare things in this environment, because we are so many messages and so many different platforms and arenas. So reaching someone or being heard or being understood is increasingly more difficult. Anything else? Yes? Younger target audience, very good. Yes. So with the digital natives and the Zoomers and all the new groups that we have coming out, we are actually reaching people who are very, very young because of their digital availability today. Anything else? Yes? Yes, multicultural. Teams are increasingly multicultural, and your message as an organization or brand might be totally taken out of context and played in a new environment, and it can have a brand new meaning in that environment. Anything else? Yeah, go for it. Multimedia, yes, yes. We are talking about multiple screens. Even in your life, you probably have at least two screens ahead of you at the moment. You have your laptop with your email running, and then you have your WhatsApp or whatever you have, or your TikToks going on your phone. And then you have this screen. So this is like the third screen, because I'm here. Anything else? What am I missing? What did you discuss with your new neighbor that hasn't been said yet? Wow, okay, you were very comprehensive if you covered it all. I'm looking for a few more insights. Language barriers? Yeah, though you could actually say that with AI, we actually don't have them maybe in the future. You never know, but that's a very good point. I think we could also talk about cultural barriers, because even if we speak the language or ChatGPT or somebody else translates the language, we might actually not get the same meaning because our background is different, right? Okay, I'll tell you what I was meaning. So the first one is Frank Sinatra, those of you who know music from way back when. And he's inviting you to dance. And that refers to being increasingly engaging. Future communication is all about getting the customer or the audience or the citizen to do something with the brand or the organization. The customers and clients don't just want to, you know, consume something and be done with it. They want to have a say. They want to be engaged, meaning that they want to have a connection with the brand. They want to be heard. Below Frank Sinatra, I have three faces, and those are emotions. So future communication is increasingly relying on emotion. If you think back about the things that you post on your social media or your discussion forums or wherever you talk to your friends, they usually have an emotional content, don't they? You either are happy about something or you are upset about something. Very seldom do you just post about your regular day without having any emotional baggage to it. You usually have some kind of an emotional upload. And this is something that happens with brands and organizations as well. You actually have positive emotions and you have negative emotions. And up until now, brands and organizations always thought, well, you know, we just want the happy customers and let's just try to keep those quiet who are actually negative or not that happy with us. But actually, those people who are not happy with us are a very valuable group, because studies show that if you are upset with something and then you actually get reconciled, you are more satisfied with the brand after this emotional upset than you were originally. Because negative emotions are such a heavy burden on us, and we have so many negative things going on in life often, that if something gives you a boost out of the negative into the positive, you are actually more committed, more engaged, as we say. And then we have the masses. So reaching the masses is a question of not just the medium, but also keeping the attention. And when you're thinking about reaching the masses, it is not always about whether you can get the masses to do what you want. It's always first about getting their attention. And if attention is scarce, meaning that you don't really have the chance to reach everyone, then it's a matter of who reaches them. And this is where we get in the new media influencers. So, for example, the TikTokers and YouTubers, because brands and organizations are thinking, well, we want to reach a population of maybe 15, 16-year-olds in the Jyväskylä region, but how do we do that? Oh, well, let's find out who is already reaching them. So, for example, an influencer or so. And they borrow that relationship. And borrowed relationships, dear younger colleagues, that's something that's actually a very popular trend in the future. No brand or organization can necessarily, you know, form their own audience, but you can always borrow somebody's audience. That comes with a lot of risks, as we do realize in our researches as well. And then I have a question of questions and answers. I would say that future communication is about answering the next question of the audience. What does that mean? It's not just pushing your brand or product or your message and getting that across. It's about figuring out what's going on in their brain. What are they going to type next? What are they going to be questioning? What's their issue, their problem, their challenge going to be next? And providing an answer for that. Let me give you an example. Many brands are putting out content that is safe, as in, This is how we have a new service coming up here. These are our new employees we are promoting. This is a new product. We are opening a new plant. Funny and fun messages. But actually, if you think about what do people need answers for, they are not always funny and fun things and happy things. Do you know what is one of the most popular content marketing? And when I say content marketing, I've lost some of you, but that just means that sponsored content made together with a brand and a media outlet. What is the biggest or the one of the most clicked contents of the Bank Nordea? One of their very popular contents. And it's not a positive thing. Any guesses? What negative thing could they do some content marketing about? It's an urgent question people have. Any guesses? Well, start with anything that's not positive in life. Mortgage? Oh, very good guess. Yeah, that would be super, but that's a happy thing for the banks. So even though it's an unhappy thing for the individual, banks are already putting out content on mortgage, but that's a very good guess. Thank you. What unhappy event in individuals' life that banks usually don't talk about? Do you need 30 seconds with the person next to you? Sure. I'll give you 30 seconds with the person next to you, and then let's hear. Okay, 30 seconds are up. Thank you. Let's hear. Now you don't have to say what you said. You can say what the person next to you said, so it takes the pressure off you. What did they say? What was your guess? What was the guess that you discussed? What negative life event could it be? Yes. Death of a relative, a very, very good guess. Yeah, super close. We're getting close. Yes. Unemployment. Ooh, even better. Yes, that would be a fantastic topic, actually. Yes, but that's not the one that's trending, but that's also a super good topic, actually. So if you're ever going to work for a bank, you should cover that. Yes. Not being able to care for yourself when you're older. Okay, a very, very hot topic too. Actually, we have more people listening and interested in that topic. All of these three are fantastically important questions that many content marketing content doesn't even cover. Yes. Suicide and drug use. Okay, now we're getting really deep. Nice, very good. Yes, very dark issues. Close, but still no hit. But yes, that would be good. Yes. Bank scams, like somebody, you know, getting your money out of you. Yes, a really good topic. I mean, you guys should be doing content marketing for banks in Finland. Because just answering these questions that you're coming up with, I would read all of that content. I would probably even share it on social media with a positive thing. So, you know. But we're not yet there. What negative life event have we not touched on yet? Any guesses? Yes. Yes, bingo. Divorce. That is the most popular content. What happens to your money in a case of divorce? And nobody wants to be the divorce bank. Nobody wants to brand themselves as, well, come to us when you're getting divorced. But everybody who is going through something like that in life wants to know. And surprisingly, when nobody's talking about it, nobody's giving answers, there's a lot of space for communication to come in and say, ah, let's answer this question. And I guess this is what the future of communication is about. It's about finding the questions people are really asking, not spamming your own material just with a nice twist that you think the audience wants to hear. See, it's all about listening. Yeah, that was good. An introduction to the dark side of life to get us started really well. Okay, so at the bottom row, the next picture that I have is snacks. And this is a sign of the future communication needing to be even more snack-sized. Simple, with visual impact, something that you can just read the headlines and move on with it. A quick video, a short introduction of something, and getting the story increasingly shortly. Then we have the younger consumers, and they're listening. But again, their questions might not be the same ones as the company is wanting to tell. And then we have the future predictor, looking into the future needs of the individual. What is the question that they are next going to ask? What should we answer next? What are they most complaining about? Because you could say that anything that a customer complains about is actually a problem of the organization, because they have somehow communicated that individuals should be getting this, but they're not getting. So I would say every complaint is mismatched expectation management. For somehow they got the idea that they're going to get an answer, or they're going to get a product that doesn't match their expectations. So hence the expectations. And then the share button is kind of easy. Then at the top, and this is one of my favorite theories, you have a soap bubble, one of those little bubbles. And this comes from sociologist Peter Sloterdijk, who says that actually in the future, we are a society of foam. You know, like dishwashing foam. Each one of us is within our own little dishwashing bubble. There you are, fully transparent to anything that's being done on the outside, but you have a feeling that you control your life, and you have a feeling that you know, and you have privacy, and you have a connection, and you choose what comes into your bubble. But in fact, anything that happens to your bubble is fully visible via the technological connections that you have. And anything that comes into the dishwashing foam spreads very easily from one bubble to another. So yes, we are isolated into our own bubbles. We can't pick and choose, but basically we are all covered in the same dishwashing foam. And anything that happens in the foam spreads quickly. So if there is poisonous toxins on the foam, it spreads super fast. And then increasingly AI and bots and whatever virtual assistants and helps we're getting, that's part of the future. And then we have the pull letters there. And this is a big shift in communication, because maybe like 20 years ago, we used to think that if you have a brand or an organization and you have a really good product, what you do is you just tell everyone that you have a good product. And you figure out who are the different stakeholders who are around you, who are the important people you need to impress. And then you tell them, and then you tailor a message, and you kind of fill it up like a vaccine, like a syringe. You fill it up, and then you come with your message, and then you spread your message and see what happens to them. And they're like, oh, there's a product, I'll buy it, kind of thing. Not like that anymore. In the online environment, there is just too many syringes and too many people spraying their messages that it gets just super confusing. Instead, you want the consumers, wherever they are, you want them to be asking you questions, pulling your information. So you want to have all the information about the brand or organization put there in a way that the individuals, customers, clients, stakeholders, get their questions answered. And then in the middle, we have the I, which means we're increasingly visual. And we have the word sponsored, which means that a lot of the future communication is actually going to be in collaboration with someone else. And this is a big question. Who do you collaborate with? Because it means that if they do something wrong, your brand is affected. If they do something right, your brand is affected. Whatever happens in the industry shapes everybody involved. But okay, that's part one of the introduction. Let's move on to what are the concepts or the theories that we are actually trying to cover. And this class that Matthias is running with you guys here actually has a course book. It's Cornelissen's book, Corporate Communication. And there is some digital copies of it, but not too many. There are some lovely printed versions in the library, but there's not too many of those either. But it's really nice book. We like it. But it doesn't cover everything we think it should. And hence, we are going to be talking about things and issues and theories here in class that are not included in the book, but they will be included in the final exam. So getting started in corporate communication, the biggest challenge, I guess, that industry has is to understand the different stakeholders. If you are thinking about being an organization or a brand, you always have people who have somehow invested money. So they've either bought your shares or they have come to work for you in a way that they're kind of financially involved. And you have groups who have a monetary investment. Those would be shareholders. So they would be the ones with who have already some kind of osakkuus or some kind of a membership with you. But beyond that, beyond the ones that actually have money invested, are everybody else in society. Because somehow or another, anybody else in society can have a stake in a business. Now, I know some of you are business students, but some of you are students of some other disciplines. But let's say that you need some money. Chances are pretty high you need some money. And you're thinking of starting somehow your own business at the moment. And this AI thing looks pretty good, you know, because you know a bit about it. You've done some Googling. You've actually have the ChatGPT on your computer, so you're pretty savvy. So you come up with a business idea that you're going to be teaching elderly neighbors about ChatGPT. That's your business. Genius, right? Yeah. Feel free to use my business idea. It's you know, yours to use. Who would be your stakeholders? And now it's time to talk to your neighbor again. Who would be your stakeholders if you are starting a business with teaching ChatGPT to elderly people? 2 minutes. Okay. Let's hear some stakeholders. Who would be your stakeholders? Yes. Yes, the elderly people, ding, ding, ding. Your most important group, of course, in that sense that, you know, before you hire people to work with you, it's the customers, your potential customers, your current customers, your past customers. Yeah, that's a very important stakeholder group. Who else? Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, the platform itself. Whoever is owning it or running it or working on it or enabling it, very good. You're really technologically tied up if your business is related to that. So anything related to the ChatGPT is a stakeholder. Who else? Yes. Oh, right. So if you bring in investors, that's, I like your thinking. You're thinking big. Get investors to begin with. Very nice. Yes. So if somebody actually wants to invest in you or wants to start you to help your business or buys you a computer, so it can be your parents. It can be somebody else as well. Yes. Sorry? Employees. Yes. Okay, that's good. So you guys are really putting this business together. You're getting investors. You're getting employees. Very nice. I like it. Yes. Growing the business before it's really even established. Mindset. I like it. Yes. Ooh, yes. You had several very good keywords here. The state, who is interested in you paying your taxes. So the taxation of businesses is really important, right? So you don't want to be sued for fraud or actually getting major bills later. So you want to sign up with the tax office. So the authorities who are dealing with the business side of the country where you're located or where you're doing your business in, very, very important stakeholder. And what was the other thing? Yes, yes, exactly. Yes, that's genius. So anybody who is connected to the customers, right? Because the customers might not even be making their own choices. Who are the customers connected to? Who makes their choices for them? And this can be anybody. It can be their grandchild who is just somewhere, you know, swinging around in a park. Or it can be their child who is working or who's actually in class with you, for example. Some of your neighbors, and you don't know who these people are, but they are a stakeholder. Who else? Yes. The media, right. We have several theories about what kind of media content is best for businesses, but generally speaking, the more attention you get and the more positive coverage, the better your brand and organization is going to do, because it kind of gets into a positive hype loop. But let's say you are not attracting the mainstream media. Let's say that Helsingin Sanomat is less interested in your business in the first weeks. Who else would you utilize to be seen? How would you gain attention or any other stakeholders that you think of at the moment? Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Let's have you first and then you. Social media platforms, social media influencers. Business partners like advertisers. Oh, very good. Yes, so you can do advertising, you can do recommendations, you can take business partners. Very good thinking. Who else? Who else would be a stakeholder? Well, think about where are the elderly people? Yes. Retirement homes. Very good point. Then you would have to probably know somebody at the retirement home. You would probably have to have good relations with them so that they actually let you come in and talk to the people. Or if you, you know, talk to the relatives and friends and families of these elderly people, how do you get them to your building? What if you're living in a student housing and you would be thinking about opening your dorm room for this business? Who would be your stakeholder? Any guesses? Who would be potential stakeholders if you started to work from your dorm room and invite elderly people to learn ChatGPT in your room? Your roomies, indeed. And there is a, yes, go ahead. Whoever you rent a room from, your roomies, and whoever is in the building, right? Because all of a sudden, I mean, your business is booming. Obviously, you're very good at what you're doing. So there's a line of elderly people in the front yard, and they are in the corridor, and they are in the elevator. And you have all these customers flocking to your business. And all of a sudden, your neighbors are thinking, I don't like it. I want to be in the elevator by myself, like Finns do. I don't want these elderly people spending time around this young people's building. And they might have an opinion that you weren't counting on. All of a sudden, you have so many different stakeholders, from government to neighbors to investors to collaborators to anybody who is dealing with the tech that you're using. And any of these stakeholders can actually say, I have a voice. I have an opinion. I don't think this business should exist. And you, as a business or an organization, have to have an explanation or maintain some kind of relationship with all of these stakeholders so that your business continues. And that, dear younger colleagues, is how stakeholder relations works. In essence, it's all about establishing relationships with all these different groups before they take you down. But moving on. So let's say that not everybody cares about your business. You have all these different potential stakeholders, right? But they might not say anything. Then what does theory say? How does somebody start caring about you? Before they start seeking information or processing it or even think about you, the situational theory of publics actually explains that there is three reasons that they go through in their brain before they become a stakeholder or start caring about your organization or brand. One, problem recognition. Do they actually realize that there is an issue or a challenge or a problem? And the problem recognition could be the popular lines of older people in your front yard. That could be the problem, that they actually realize something is happening. And do they have a feeling that something should be done about it? And this is the borderline of, do you have enough people caring that they organize into something? Or do they just let it be? The second is constraint recognition. So do people realize what hinders them from speaking up? In Finland, it should be, or it could be shyness. They don't want to say anything because they don't really know you. Or they don't want to say anything because it's kind of nice actually having these elderly people around. But constraint recognition is, do you recognize the limits what you can do? Like saying, I want my elevator to be free during the day when I bring my laundry, so I don't want to walk through the stairs because the elevator is always busy. And these can be anything from self-efficacy. Do you feel like you can help yourself, or physical, or lack of access, or lack of the same language, or anything like that? And the third one is level of involvement. How much do you actually care? Because if you don't really care, you're not going to become a stakeholder and start speaking about something or start speaking up. So it's a matter of how involved, how much do you care about this? How likely is the person to get their message across? And if all three of these activate, according to the situational theory of publics, you have a stakeholder voice that's coming to you, and they're very often critical. When stakeholders are happy about something, they're usually quiet. And when stakeholders are unhappy about something, they usually organize. But let's see. I would say that every brand and organization is like a battery. But let's see what you think. Why? 2 minutes. All right, why is your organization or your brand, it could be your new business, why are they like a battery? Let's start with some reasons. And I'm looking for all kinds of new ideas here too. I mean, I have my reasons, but I mean, you might come up with new ones. So, any suggestions, any guesses? Yes. Yes, organizations always have haters and supporters. Before you start your business, before you even put your printed name on the door of your dorm room, of your AI business, some people are just not going to be happy about it. They just don't think it's something the students should be doing in their dorm room. They don't think this is the best way to organize it. They don't think this is the most efficient. They think it's going to be a waste of your time, everybody else's time. They don't think it's good for the elderly people to be walking around in your neighborhood, whatever. They don't like it. And it's nothing that you've done because you just put your name up there. You haven't done anything. Perhaps they have had bad experiences with similar businesses. Perhaps they have had bad experiences with such a sector. Or perhaps they have negative experiences of using a computer or something like that. Whatever it is, you don't know what activates it. But there are people who just, to begin with, don't like you and don't like your business. And this is important to know. Because sometimes we have businesses who are reacting to these negative influences really heavily, and there's nothing they can do about it. At the same time, before you have done anything, you might just as well have those people who are really happy with it, who think that this is a genius idea, that you really should be doing this, and you actually should be encouraging everybody else to do this as well. And it's fantastic that students are activating and teaching the elderly, and the society wins, and you win, and everybody wins, and they're really happy for you before you've done anything. These two groups exist. Now remember, it's the three reasons, whether they are active enough, whether they feel that there's constraints. Those count in whether they voice their opinion or not. And very often in society, if you support something, you don't really say much, do you? You're just happy with it. But if you are against something, you might actually voice your opinion. Any other reasons why your organization would be a battery? Yes. Yes, very good. You always want to have people who are talking about it. You want to have the people who are active. I think this is really good thinking. Yeah. Also, the organization itself needs critical thinking. Very often we start a business or we start an organization and we collect the like-minded thinkers, right? Because they agree with us. And this is what CEOs do, leadership of universities and organizations and businesses. They often collect people who think like them. Because it's stressful enough to deal with all the complaints and issues and problems and legal restraints and stuff. So you don't want to have in your inner circle the people who disagree with you on everything. But studies actually show that if you have a diverse group within you, that you're within your reach, if you are able to hear also the different voices and the different opinions, you will actually be more successful in the long run. You will not necessarily be happy because you have to listen to all these disagreements all the time, right? But for the business, it might be a better choice. Any other guesses or any other ideas? Why would your business be like a battery? Yes. Mm-hmm, right, okay. Yeah, that's very true that negative stories travel further and they're actually more credible. So if anything is written about an organization, if you write something bad about it or something good about it, people are more likely to believe the negative one. Somebody said it's somehow we're wired that way. We are wired to survive in an environment where we don't know the threats. So we are always overreacting to negative ones and underreacting to the positive ones. And this is something that happens to you guys when you get your exam results back, right? Or if you get a paper back and it has all these red marks or something and you're like, oh no, what went wrong? And you focus on those five things that went wrong and you totally ignore the 125 million that went right. Yeah? And this is a skill that in corporate communication you need to learn. You need to also learn to understand the positive side of it. I like this metaphor also because I think organizations and brands are there to energize people. They are there to give a voice, give an idea, bring forward some change. Whatever change it is in society that we need, whatever change it is that individuals need. And then we could actually say, and this is something that's not in the exam book, but this is only in the classroom, that there are specific groups that we call faith holders, or hate holders, or fake holders. So groups that are actually there really supporting you, and they have really good experiences, they write positive reviews, they recommend you, they give you customers, they talk good about your company. And then we have the negative hate holders who actually complain about you, or troll you, or actually try to damage your brand, or write fake reviews even sometimes. And then we have fake holders who are groups or organizations or software or algorithms who are actually pretending to be something they are not. So sometimes these are sock puppets or meat puppets, so people pretending to be different fake profiles or people just creating software that does it for you, who are either appearing to be more supporting of something or less supporting of something. So buying, for example, Instagram followers is an example of fake holding. You can buy fake holders who actually appear to be faith holders, like your followers or friends. And actually, you guys are very lucky because Matthias is teaching this course, and he did his doctoral degree dissertation on hate holders. So any questions that you have on the negative side of engagement or negative side of stakeholders, you have the local expert here. So let's move on. In corporate communication, we are thinking about this digital environment on the bigger side of things. I mean, if you think marketing is about the relationship with the customer, right? Leadership is the position that organization is led. Accounting is the financial arenas of that. Corporate communication has all these wide variety of different stakeholders that you're dealing with, then of course the question is, well, where are they? How do we find them? How do we have to know ahead of time who are these activating groups, and do we have to go hunting for them? Well, we like to think about this all in a form of arenas. We think that whenever something happens, it kind of automatically forms an arena around it. So for example, there you are, I don't know if you can recognize yourself, but you're smack in the middle in the field. Your business is down there in the middle of it. And around you are different publics, different stakeholders who are either interested in your arena or not. And on the arena, some people come to discuss with you, and some people just follow closely, and some people ignore you. The important thing is who comes first. Whenever there is a new topic, say, for example, AI in Finland at the moment, or AI use in education, whoever comes first usually gets the most attention and usually gets to dictate what is okay and what is not okay in an area. We've done some research on nuclear power and genetically modified foods and vaccine discussions about how much does it mean that if you are the first one to talk about something, what kind of a role do you get? And it turns out if you are the first to talk about something, you can actually even marginalize others. If you are one of the first to establish something, you can decide who does not have a voice, because you can build an arena where discussions take place on who's going to be talking. So our thinking is that all this communication happens on different issue arenas. They can be anything. This classroom can be an issue arena. And people are there for a shared reason, an issue. I guess you guys are here for the introduction of corporate communication, partly because it's a course you have to take to get the basic business studies. So much of a binding motivation that you guys have. It's given from above, but you are here nonetheless. But if somebody else comes to this arena, so let's say out of this hall, there is a person dressed up as a Santa Claus, comes running in here and starts throwing rubber boots at you. How would you feel? Intrigued? Positive? Neutral? Negative? Let's see. Person comes running in a Santa Claus suit, starts throwing rubber boots at you. Let's see how you feel. Positive? Neutral? Negative? Okay, these people are happy. These people are not so happy. Probably because they would hit you guys first with the boots on this side. Yes. Right, okay. Obviously, some people need the boots, right? But I mean, they're coming in, they're throwing the boots. You might get something that's your size, but then you might just get the left foot. You might not get the right one. And you're left like, okay, what do we do with this? And yet, this is what most brands and organizations do on social media. They come into a classroom or an arena, a digital issue arena. They spam their own message, and then they leave. And then the people are left with individual boots somewhere here. They're thinking, okay, should we start trading these? What do we do with them? And they've done everything right, the business, because they read up who are our potential customers, and they said, ah, yes, yes, they are the students. They're going to be walking and bicycling in next week. It's going to rain. So who do we send as brand ambassadors? Well, this is Finland. Let's send Santa Claus. Who can give free samples? Santa Claus. Everybody loves Santa Claus. Let's send Santa Claus. And they had a really great idea, right? You know, get this lovely spokesperson. Everybody's happy about it. Bring some samples and come onto the arena and send them over here. And yet some of you did a thumbs down, even though this was a genius plan of the rubber boot company. Because they came uninvited on an arena that was not their place to be. You were not here to get free samples of rubber boots. Well, some of you might be, but you just didn't know it. But anyway, this is how it works. Before you go anywhere as a brand and organization, you need to know what the audience is there for. What are the questions they're asking? What are they expecting? What do they want? And what do they definitely not want? And if you don't find this out, it's spamming. What's the best spam you have ever gotten? 2 minutes with your neighbor. Okay, let's hear it. What's the best spam you've ever gotten? Yes, let's hear it. Yes. Oh, something that makes you really happy. Yeah, I think that's fantastic spam. So basically it did give you something because it made you really happy. Yeah, do you have an example of something that made you happy? Very bad phishing attempts, like really bad language that you can really distinguish it. Yeah. Okay, that's good. Anybody else have examples of really good spam that you really liked or, well, thought it was good, innovative at least? Yes. Uh-huh, okay. And you call that spam? Uh-huh, okay. Yeah, so the faith holders of Apple who have believed in Apple enough to purchase it, yes, I'm one myself, are actually spamming you by their mere existence. This is a very interesting stakeholding event we have here. Thank you for sharing. Really innovative. Thank you. Interesting spam you've run into? I'm interested in the logic of what makes spam interesting to you. What makes it good for you? So we had, for example, the example of positive emotions. That it brings you positive emotions. But the reason behind it is actually tapping into something you might want. It couldn't be that you just want to be happy and you just want to laugh at something. One of my favorite spams recently of somebody, Santa Claus, coming in throwing rubber boots is an invitation to the Illuminati. So I got that via email. I was very proud, of course. It was very bad English, but apparently I am a very gorgeous person chosen by the Illuminati. They want me. They promised me great power. And I was, of course, very taken by that. I was so impressed by that spam that I actually posted it on my Instagram. And people were overjoyed. And some people actually welcomed me, giving me the insight that they were actually already part of the Illuminati, which I did not know. So it really, you know, it not just benefited me, it made me happy. It made my network happy. It made everybody happy around me. So that was great spam. But not always so on the issue arenas. Very often, messages that brands and organizations send actually don't leave people happy. They just leave them upset or frustrated. Why are they here? What are they doing here? And that's because they're not answering the questions that the individuals are there to hear. So that means we have to question, how does this message add to the brand's reputation? What happens with the Santa Claus and the throwing of the boots into this classroom? What happens to the reputation of the company? I mean, I'm sure they were thinking this is an innovative way. Nobody else has done it. So they were thinking of being the first runner. Yes, okay, we can say they were the first runner. We've never had that before. But at the same time, they did not hear us. They just spammed their own reputation on it. So here we have some concepts like legitimacy. And this is a very interesting concept in corporate communication because it means the reason or the right to exist. Do you exist because of people's support or do people not support you? And in corporate communication, we really care about how does the legitimacy, the right, the license to exist of a brand or organization come about. And if there are enough problems with the organization, we start to question their legitimacy. And this is what happens in news media often. You start seeing writings about why are we paying this much money for this? Do we need that many schools? Do we need this many offices to deal with these problems? Legitimacy is questioned. The other one central concept that we're dealing with here is reputation. What is the record of past deeds? What do we say about this brand or organization? Also, we have the image, which is basically how it's perceived by us, what it looks like. Identity, what does the company stand for? Reputation, trust, do we trust it or not? And then, of course, on the issue arenas, we also have the competitors that are all the way around us. Well, in the book, and this is the Cornelissen book that you guys are reading for this class, these are the titles of your chapters. And I've placed them next to our own metaphor of the battery to kind of give you an idea. So first of all, we talk about internal communication. That refers to the relationship we have with the people who are working inside the organization, right? So the teams and the employees and the supervisees and anybody who is working inside the organization, whether they're temporary or whether they are permanent worker there. That's internal communication. Then in the negative side of things, we have crisis communication and issues management. An issue, remember, whether people get activated into becoming a stakeholder and activated into having a say, those things, whether they feel that it's whether they care enough, whether they feel that there is no constraints for them. And then we have the media relations. And the media logic is actually writing about stories that are newsworthy. And newsworthiness comes from a certain set of criteria. And those are usually globally established, not in every single, but in Western democracies, they're quite established. And those are criteria such as surprisingness, impact, negativity, closeness. So, for example, if this fantastic new business of yours would all of a sudden get like 10,000 elderly people signing up as customers, that would be impactful, and I'm quite sure Keskisuomalainen would approach you and say, hey, how did you do that? Where did you get 10,000 elderly people in central Finland to your business? Because it's just impactful. And those criteria are actually talked about in the media relations part of the book. And then we have public affairs, which can be translated into Finnish in several ways. So first of all, it can be kind of the relationship you have with the public sector or julkisen sektorin suhteet, so public sector or vaikuttaja or any kind of lobbying and stuff you do, keeping the relationship with the public side. Then we have community relations, so the relations you have with NGOs and the neighbors. And that chapter talks about the stakeholders that you have around you. Then there is a chapter on digital communication, and this is the part of the book that we're not so happy with, partly because it's getting old, because this book came out in 2020, and it's now 23. So that part of it is something we're trying to add to here in class. Then we have a chapter on advertising in the book. So that concept is about how you buy the relationship, how you buy the visibility in an established media platform. So, for example, you buy an ad on a website. That gets a lot of marketing. And then you have direct marketing, which is something that you're also talking about in the introduction to marketing class, as well as sales promotion. Those are clear targets. You want to just sell more. You want to get that relationship with the people who are buying stuff. Then one of my favorites at the moment is investor relations. And actually, those of you who saw the guy who came in here and left before the class started, he's actually our visiting professor. He's coming in from the US. He's here for 3 weeks. He's Alex Laskin, and he's one of the world's leading authors in investor relations. And if you're thinking, oh, I don't know if corporate communication is a career for me, actually, it earns 3 times the amount of money that other professions in the field does. So this is something where you can combine finance and communication really well, investor relations. And sponsoring, publicity or public relations, then that's working with the different groups you need to work with. And then, of course, the book talks about the market, which we also talk about kind of with the words that we used previously, the issue arenas. So the arenas are kind of similar to the market. But because I mentioned that the digital chapter is a little behind, I like to give a new definition of digital corporate communication. And this is from a book that Mark Badham and I actually are putting out, or is already out. And it's called The Handbook of Digital Corporate Communication. And this is how we define it. So what is corporate communication in the digital environment? It is strategically, so meaning you are planning ahead. It's not just random messages, but it's strategic. You think, what do I do, and what happens then when I do that? Strategic. Management, so you try to orchestrate it in an organized way. Of digital technologies, so you utilize anything that's available, that's useful for you, so AI included. And your aim is to improve communication of the organizations with the society or also inside the organization. So not just their employees, but also society, which means several different stakeholders. And why? Remember the nice word legitimacy? You want to keep the intangible and tangible assets. Intangible being reputation, trust, legitimacy. Tangible being the finances that are coming in, the revenue that your customers bring. So that's our new definition. I don't know if Matthias is going to put it on the exam, but anyway, make sure to check it before you go there. Now, if that is the definition, and we said that the digital chapter is a bit behind, this is a bit newer version of what we mean with the digital arenas. How many of you have ever heard of the PESO model? P-E-S-O. Okay, good for you guys. So that's a very typical traditional marketing model, which basically says P, paid, E, earned, S, social, and O, owned, was it? And it's basically saying that these are the things where you can get your message across. So we're looking at different media arenas. Where do you get your brand and organization? Where do you get your message across? So at the top right-hand corner, we have owned media. That would be like website. You can create a website for your business, right? It's quite quickly to do, and it looks quite nice visually nowadays with all those ready programs. For that arena, your own website, you control what you write in there, right? And you control the arena, what kind of pictures are there and who all posts there. Full control. Then you have paid, which is advertising. You can actually accept advertisers, as some of you had a great plan for your business, and control also what they advertise and where they advertise it, because it's something that you pay for. And those are pretty much the only two things you have control of in these new arenas. The only two. Let's move on to the left-hand side here and look at placed. So you can do product placements where you will have your, for example, your company logo showing in a sitcom, or you can have it show on a TikTok video so that people actually see, oh, what is that company? And then they start Googling you and you're just visible somewhere. Or you can do sponsored, meaning that you're actually paying someone to wear your logo while they're running the Finlandia marathon and hopefully winning it. So then when somebody takes picture of them winning it, hey, there's your logo, and they think they associate you with the winning of a marathon, and they hopefully buy your product and become your customer because the association's there. But then we have a bunch of new things, like in the middle, advocated. And this is your employees, your future employees, who will write in their own social media feeds and streams, how is it to work with you? What is it like in your business? What are you like as a boss? What do you not do well? What do you do well? Why would they not recommend your product? And why would they recommend your product? And yes, some companies control this. So they have these kind of customer ambassadors and they tell them what to do, but others not so well. And then everything from the zero down is actually weak control of the arena. But these are so important when it comes to building a brand and organization. So we have everything from shared social media, what people post, earned, what the legacy media writes, so the journalistic stories and the media, crowdsourced, what people write up in Wikipedia, to artificial, what comes up in AI searches and AI compilations, contracted, what the new media influencers write about you, especially if you're working with them, curated, what different newsletters post you in, searched, what people come up with the search engines, recycled, what kind of memes are made out of your brand and organization, and hijacked, who takes your message and turns it into something totally different. And just to give you an illustration of this, I've looked a bit about our previous Prime Minister, Sanna Marin. So, for example, her owned and paid are all those lovely stories of her posing and whatever she's done. And then the contracted is when she's posing with her influencer friends. And then the crowdsourced and shared are the ones where people are commenting on her networks. The earned media is, of course, the Time 100, where the journalist picked her as one of the most influential people in the world. The searched, if we look at what is the most searched thing, it seems to be Sanna Marin's husband. So apparently she's hot topic on the marriage market as well. So those are all slightly controlled. But then when we come to the hijacked areas, we could talk about her party case where we had the claim of cocaine being discussed, or what is the most searched deepfake. I think it's Sanna Marin porn. So these are the different areas where she is discussed as a brand. And I'm quite sure she's not happy about most of this. Same way for brands and organizations. Brands and organizations are discussed on a multitude of areas. And the people working in corporate communication are the ones who are controlling where they want the voice and where they want the discussion to be. Not that you can control it totally, but you can go somewhere there. So I promised some trends before I turn it over to Matthias, who will tell you all about how to get this course done with acing it. Some of the hot things that we have going on at the moment is research on misinformation. So what's going on for when brands and organizations get a lot of fake content and when they get blamed for something that didn't do. Metaverse, when brands and organizations are building a digital presence in online platforms. Memes. And if you want to do a study of something that's really powerful, I really recommend memes because you know how people have this filter in when they see a message from a brand or organization? When they see a meme, our filter goes off because we think it's entertainment. So we just take in whatever is in the meme. So if you're wanting to do like a really impressive political campaign, use memes. If you want to take down the leader of your hobby group, use memes. Those are the ways to influence people because they don't mess with our filters. Then AI, what that's doing, co-creation. A lot of people want to be working with brands. Brand ambassadors, so not just the employees, but also other ambassadors. And the whole idea of canceling and boycotting something. Those are topics that we are very interested in. And especially the cancel culture and boycotts, I think that's a really interesting phenomena that's going on, that especially we in corporate communication are really interested in studying. But yes, so my last slide is about the future. We started off with this picture that we had lots of ideas on, and I had of course chosen several different pictures, but I see five different roles that in the future communication practitioners should be playing. First, because the world is so polarized and there are all kinds of bubbles and you guys are in your individual dishwashing bubble, we need to be a builder of society. We need communication, so brand and organization need to come up with a way to support that people can talk together and talk, and especially combine the fans. So when there's no platform for the fans to get together, that's a chance missed. And then the second role, this is something new that's happening, is actually the communication people need to be the conscience, omatunto, for AI and how the brand and the organization is using AI. What kind of data are we collecting and how is this data potentially harming in 5 to 10 years the people who we have collected the data from? The European Union is quite good with this, so we're doing a good job, but that's not the case everywhere in the world. And then the third role that communication professionals need to be playing in the future is actually co-creation enabler. How do you help the people be part of the brand, be part of the unity, just contribute to the brand? If they have crazy ideas, if they have negative ideas, where do you put them out? How do you utilize these thinkings? And then fourth, which is one of my favorite terms, we need to be box turners. How many of you have ever heard the word box turner? None. Okay, good. I'm going to explain it to you. Old consumer, hence me, we used to think that when something comes up in a store that says, for example, say I was shopping for earphones. I was in the market for USB earphones or some kind of other device that I can listen to my stuff with. Maybe wireless, yes. And I read some of the reviews and they say, best earphones. The old consumer thinks, oh, that's really nice. Somebody must have done a comparison and they realize that this is best. And they think, yes, let's buy the best earphones that are out there. And then it says, really high quality sound. And the old consumer thinks, okay, that's great. It's really high quality sound. The new consumer, probably some of you, will box turn every single statement the company makes. So if they say, best earphones, what do? They box turn, meaning they read the small print. What do you mean these are best earphones? Who made the comparison? How many people did they actually survey? Who verified this result? Where was it made? How many people participated? You start reading the whys. How was this done? Why are they saying it? And they figure out that it was a consumer survey only done in one part of rural Pakistan, and those people were happy with it, but it's only a representative of one area of the world. Box turning. Finding the truth behind it. Remember, we started out with the idea of asking questions, answering questions. Box turning is something where you have stakeholders asking questions and you as a company have to answer. And then the last one is the role of being a global diplomat, which means that you have to answer statements and claims and future questions of the individuals coming up in the future. But that's it for me. Matthias will continue with you guys to tell you how the course is going to go. I am so happy you guys were here to talk with me and you actually warmed up to my abrupt questions. And I wish you guys a very fun time with Matthias and all the people we have planned for you.
Yeah, thank you, Wilman. Actually, before you leave, a quick question. So are there, let's say, top two, top three things that when students leave the lecture room today that they should keep in mind from your lecture slides?
Aha! Top two, three things you should remember. Let's hear from you. Yes. Top two, three things. What do you need to keep in mind? What do you remember? It's almost over. Let's get rid of that slide so you can't read it. What are the top two, three things you remember from today? I did not do a very good job, but there's one. Yes. Wow, yes, very good condensation. That there are shareholders and there are stakeholders, and the stakeholders have increasingly more voice. Very good. Wow. One heard the message today. Anything else? What are you keeping in your mind today? And I don't care if it's the Santa Claus thing. That's also really good. It really helps you with your career in the future years. Just make sure you're never the Santa Claus. What else would you raise as the top things to learn? Yes. Yeah, thank you. I agree. So that there are so many different fields, not just publicity or not just advertising or your own website. And you can have total different representations from a brand and organization, and you can't control most of them. Really good. Are you happy with these two, or shall we continue? Okay, super.
Yes, thank you, Vilma. Let's give up applause to Vilma. She's going to leave now, so thank you. Okay, I think we'll take about 15 to 20 minutes. I will go through the course practicalities. Just want to keep in mind that actually Vilma's slides are already available in Moodle. And actually this spreadsheet of mine is also available there as well. So you can follow it now, or if you want to, you know, read it later, feel free to do so, but you should be able to find the links in Moodle. Yeah, I'm gonna go through a little bit of course practicalities here, and in fact, all the necessary details in terms of all the practicalities, schedule, lectures, especially the exam, can be found on Moodle, and I really encourage you to read the student guide over there. So basically, of course, you can always send me an email and ask questions. You can also ask questions here during the lectures, either in English or in Finnish. I'm able to answer it in both languages. But before doing that, I really encourage you to read the student guide, because it should, you know, go through all the practical things of the course. If you still feel that something is not clear for you, then of course feel free to ask. First lecture is today, and I want you to keep in mind that from now on we are going to see you guys on every Tuesday until October 24th. And as you're able to see, we have to switch rooms a bit in the upcoming lectures. Next time we're going to be on the main campus, and also the following next sessions as well. We will have one remote meeting on October 17th. Actually, Jukka Niittymä is going to talk about artificial intelligence back then, and Jukka is actually located in Helsinki, or not in Helsinki, but in southern part of Finland, and it is easier for all of us to have Jukka remotely. So that is the only time we are not gonna meet you in class. We will also have electronic exam in this course, actually, for the very, very first time. I will tell you more about the exam practicalities in just a little bit, but you're able to see that we will have three time slots for the exam, so you can already mark those in your calendars to keep in mind and when preparing to your exam and when thinking about the possible time to take it. But I will tell you more in just a little bit. So we will have six lectures overall, and like I said, all the lectures are in English. We do have the joint lectures now with the Finnish speaking course, and like I said, if you feel that you would like to, you know, contact me or ask questions, I'm happy to answer to you both in Finnish and English, so don't be afraid of that. And the video recordings of these lectures can be found in Moodle, but there's a link to Moniviestin as well. So this was the first lecture, and next time Professor Chiara Valentini is actually going to be here, and she's going to talk about the role of communication in stakeholder management. And actually, before our next lecture, I have already added a little pre-task for you in Moodle. So it would be very nice if you have any specific questions related to corporate communication or the field in general, that you would post your questions to Moodle so that Chiara can actually answer those when she's going to arrive here in 1 week. I'm going to pick, and if you're going to ask the questions in Finnish, I'm going to translate them to Chiara, and we can try to answer the questions at the later section of Chiara's lecture. So that is actually a great chance for you to be able to find out if there are certain things, let's say in corporate communication or related field that you don't know about, or if you feel that some of the topics we're going to talk about is a bit misleading or stuff like that. Like I said, feel free to ask, and you can actually post your questions in Moodle. Then on the third lecture in early October, we will have Anni Kosunen from Ellun Kanat actually visiting here, and she's going to talk about more on the practical side of things in terms of the field of corporate communication, how you create a communication strategy, what you need to keep in mind when doing strategic planning and campaigns. And Anni will give you examples of different kind of jobs and careers from her own perspective, but also how versatile we are as a field in terms of the different career options you have. Then on the fourth lecture, I'm going to talk about corporate communication in a changing media environment, probably add something about social media in the mix as well. This will follow some of the things in the Cornelissen book, but also I will add something outside of it as well. At the end of the day, the main idea of these lectures is also to talk about something else as well that is included in the book, so that we don't just strictly follow the book here in the lecture, so that you can actually get something additional out of these lectures. And like I said, so this fifth lecture will be remote. So Jukka Niittymä will talk about more in terms of artificial intelligence and how does that gonna change the field, and what kind of different opportunities, but also is it a threat to some extent to our field as well? So Jukka is an expert in this field. I think some even say that he's a guru in Finland in terms of AI. So Jukka will tell you more about that. And Jukka is actually doing a doctoral dissertation here at the JSPE on artificial intelligence in corporate communication discipline. So there's a connection on that side as well to us. And then the last session on October 24th, I'm going to talk about specialist areas of corporate communication. And let's say this includes, for example, the investor relations and areas like that. We can sum up a course a little bit. Then again, you have a little chance to ask questions from me and get prepared for the upcoming exam as well. So I hope that you all have had access to Moodle. Please check that you do. You should, if you have enrolled either to a Finnish version of this course or to the English version of the course. So either way, you should have access to Moodle. And I will keep both of these pages updated so they should be equal to each other in terms of content and stuff. So please check that you have access to Moodle, and if not, please contact me so that you are able to get all the necessary information related to course. Yeah, and again, I mentioned about Moni Viestin, but you already know that we are going to have the recordings over there. A short note about course literature here. So we will use the Cornelissen 2017 book. However, if you have access to 2020 version of the book, you can also use that. So the content is pretty much the same. You know, some updates to the 2017 version, but I would say that all the stuff and content are pretty much the same, or at least in same order in the later version as well. However, keep in mind that there are only 230 copies available in library. So if you would all now go and loan the book, it could be so that they run out. But I would say that this shouldn't be an issue. We will have the exam slots, you know, scattered all over the place. So it usually means that you should all have access, at least at some point, to the book. But again, keep in mind that there are only 230 copies available. So, you know, library might run out of the books at some point. But in the past years, this hasn't been an issue, even though there are over 400 of you enrolled to the course. So it shouldn't be an issue after all. Yeah, and I think this is the most important part of this practical presentation to keep in mind is the final exam. And obviously your course grade will be based on the exam result you have. And like I said, for the first time, we will have it in the exam system. So the e-exam or electronic exam means that you can take the exam independently in one of our exam rooms. So keep in mind, this is not an open book exam, so you can't use the book or the computers are not connected to internet when you are doing the exam in one of the rooms. They are actually there's surveillance in the rooms, so you have to keep that in mind. But at the same time, it gives you a lot of flexibility in terms of when to take the exam. And like I said, it also means that the books should be, you know, a lot easily available for you to prepare for the exam, because, like I said, the times are more scattered during the fall and early next year. You will actually find more information on the e-exam site by, you know, opening this presentation and clicking the link. You will also find the links in Moodle to find out more about the e-exam in general and all the practicalities related to that. And this is also important. So I think all of you have now enrolled either to Viestinnän johtamisen perusteet or to the Introduction to Corporate Communication course. Besides that, you should also enroll to one of the exam realizations of the course based on the language you're going to have. So you will have multiple options there, both in Finnish and in English. But you should, you know, do the exam realization based on the language you have been choosing for the course, so either in Finnish or in English. And actually, the registration in Sisu is already available for the final exam slot, but also for the first renewal of the exam, if you want to make the first attempt of the exam on that first renewal time slot. And actually, after you have been registering for one of the slots, you can start thinking about booking a time in the e-exam system. However, keep in mind that you can only book the exam time in the exam system 30 days in advance. So technically, it means that if you want to take the exam, let's say in November 10, it means that you can only book the time on October 10. So even though you register in Sisu, you have to wait until a later stages in the fall so that you can do the booking in exam system. So keep this also in mind when you know, planning planning on taking the exam on certain date. Yeah, I mean, that's almost all of the stuff for me to go through at this stage. You will find my contact details over there. Vilma Luomaho was here today, and Chiara Valentini will be here on the next session, and we will also meet Anni and Jukka. So again, if you have any questions, you can come down here and ask either in English or in Finnish, and see you next time around. Thanks.